Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
Our very special guest today is Angus Fletcher, professor of story science at Ohio State's Project Narrative. His research has been called life-changing by Brené Brown, mind-blowing by Malcolm Gladwell. He has been endorsed by psychologists, neurologists, and doctors such as Martin Seligman and Antonio Damasio, and has been supported by institutions ranging from the National Science Foundation to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. In 2023, he was awarded the Commendation Medal by the U.S. Army for his groundbreaking research with U.S. Army Special Operations into primal intelligence. Primal intelligence. And his latest book is called Primal Intelligence: You Are Smarter Than You Know. And there are very few books or writers who have affected me as much as Angus and this book have. In the few weeks since I have read it, my coaching has changed. My thoughts about intuition, imagination, and emotion have changed. I've watched close to 20 videos featuring Angus on YouTube, and I don't typically ever watch that many videos with or about one person. Dr. Fletcher says that as humans, we think in story, not in words or pictures. He has plenty of research and street cred to back this up. Hollywood studios consult with him regularly. In addition to everything else, he's a screenwriter and a very compelling author. I could go on and on, but that wouldn't leave much time for us to talk, would it? So I will start with something familiar, and soon you'll discover how mind-blowingly different some of Angus's groundbreaking ideas are. But first, the amazingly familiar part. Copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast, and most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. So Angus, welcome and thank you for joining us.
I'm totally thrilled to be here, David. Thank you for that brilliant introduction, which makes me sound far more interesting than I actually am.
Oh, I think you underestimate yourself, but we'll leave it to the viewers to decide that. Let me start with this question. A lot of people in the direct marketing community have felt boxed in by this conventional wisdom that the only true kind of story is a hero's journey. I believe you have a very different point of view about story and stories, and that includes the anatomy of the brain. Could you tell us about it?
Yeah, so the important thing to remember about story is it evolved in the human brain as a way of inventing the future. So anything that we have now that you find interesting, whether it's art or science or technology, there was a point in which another human in previous eras was sitting around and they imagined that. They imagined a story of that. And then they imagined the individual steps of the story about how that came to be. And what that means is that the point of story is not to be formulaic or archetypal. It is to be innovative. And on a more mundane level, the purpose of story in your brain is to make plans. Another word for story is a plot is a plan. And plans are not formulaic or archetypal. If they were, then you would constantly see the same thing working over and over and over again. Military situations and business situations, right? There'd be no need to innovate or have imagination or intuition or any of these kinds of things. So the reason that a small number of story formulas have been settled upon, like the hero's journey, or, you know, like any kind of other Hollywood model, is just because there's an efficiency of scale, and these large enterprises find it faster and easier to settle in on a couple of stories that are largely effective most of the time with many people. And so that's kind of where we get these ideas from. But the reality is that if you want to break through and sort of establish a new market or establish a new profile for yourself, you're going to get there by doing a new story and not by taking something off the shelf.
Okay, that's a great point. And I love how you focus on innovation versus, you know, the standard that large organizations kind of like to repeat over and over again, even though it doesn't always work for them. Let's talk about primal intelligence. When I first found out about your book and before I read it, my guess about primal intelligence was pretty primal, lizard brain stuff. You know, the old animal description of you either mate with something or you kill it or you eat it. You have a very different, I think, much more sophisticated, and I would say much more useful definition of primal intelligence, and it has to do with four qualities of thinking that have nothing to do with logic. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, so very simply, primal intelligence is your ability to act intelligently with limited information. And the reason that's primal is because the human brain evolved in environments where it didn't know very much. And part of the reason it didn't know very much is because the world was changing very rapidly. And the more that the world changes, the more that the information you have in your pocket is getting outdated. And so the human brain evolved in these volatile, changing, fragile environments, but it still had to act intelligently. And the way that it did so was by acting the opposite of a computer. What a computer does is a computer sits still, absorbs vast amounts of information, finds patterns in that information, then develops probabilities out of those that it uses to make predictions. That's fine as long as you're sitting in an environment that's not changing. And that's also fine as long as you're sitting in an environment that's transparent enough for you to see everything about it. Unfortunately, that's not life. That's math, which is why AI is, in my opinion, doomed, except in small, narrow applications like warehouses and other things like that. So primal intelligence is your ability to do the opposite of a computer. What is it to do the opposite of a computer? It's to initiate action, to do something, to try something, to attempt something, to learn rapidly from feedback, and then by kind of leveraging what you learn from feedback to continue pushing your situation, pushing your environment, so that you are either outcompeting your adversaries for opportunities or moving faster than your competitors who are trying to eat you. I mean, these are all these kinds of reasons that the brain evolved. And as I talk about in the book, and as maybe we can talk about in more detail, this basically involves four primal abilities. The first is intuition, which is your ability to spot new things in your environment. The second is imagination, which is your ability to turn those opportunities into plans or paths of action. The third is common sense, which is your ability to pick which of the paths you've imagined is likely to work. And the fourth is emotion, which is the ability to pick which of those paths is likely to work for you. Because each of us has our own personal story, our own personal narrative, the things that feel right for us. And you can be very successful in this world. You'd also feel lost, alone, alienated, dissociated, because you're essentially living somebody else's life. And so your emotions are there to help keep you on track in terms of what is the path that you yourself feel most naturally comfortable living.
Yeah. One question my girlfriend had, because I've told everyone I know to read your book, I'm so excited about it. One question she had is, so I took the assessment. I found out my strongest primal intelligence factor is emotion, and my weakest is, you would have thought it was common sense, but no, it was imagination. And her question, not just about imagination, but in general, how do you strengthen, or is it, or do you want to focus on the things that you're best at and get stronger at that and you know, delegate imagination to someone else, as it were in my case? Or how do you get these qualities stronger, and which ones should you work on?
Okay, so yeah, so to your point, what I talk about in the book is that these are these four natural abilities, and I also talk about in the book that most of us have kind of gravitated towards one of them in our lives, and we sort of ride that to our success. So if you're someone who has a kind of high degree of intuition, you're usually the person who's sort of pointing out opportunities for other people, but maybe because you've got that high degree of intuition, you haven't developed your common sense. And so you're always spamming a lot of really interesting things, but you're not kind of, you know, building a stable financial portfolio, right? Whereas if you've got high common sense, maybe you're the person that everyone can rely on to kind of balance the budgets, but we're not looking to you to figure out, you know, what the hot new trend is going to be for next year. And so most of us kind of gravitate to one of these. And then because humans are social communal animals, we find other people to kind of help support us in the areas where we're not that great at. However, as I point out in the book, all of us have the ability to be good at all four of these. And to your question, which one should you focus on? Well, what I say in the book is, when your life is hard, when it's challenging, you should lean into the thing that you're naturally good at. So in your case, when your life is challenging, you should lean on that emotional ability. You should lean on that thing which is going to give you a sense of life purpose. It's going to give you the ability to kind of bounce back from difficult times and so on and so forth. But when your life starts to get easy, try and develop another skill. So in your case, develop imagination. And in your case, you know, what imagination will do is it'll allow you to see other paths. So, you know, when you were having these interviews with people, for example, you would be having kind of more rapid branching responses to the person, you know, that you were talking to. You'd be seeing more paths and opportunities. And the way that you do that in terms of working with imagination, I mean, there's a lot of tips I give in the book, but one of them I suggest is to shift your thinking from probability into possibility. And so, you know, we live in this world where we're conditioned to think probabilistically, and that basically leads our brain to hone in on what it thinks is the most likely thing to work, and then we kind of lean into that. Whereas actually, imagination is driven by possibility, which is something that you haven't tried before, and therefore you don't know if it's going to work, but it might work. And so to start to think in possibility like children do is to encourage you to engage in more risk-taking, and by doing so to see more opportunities to initiate action. And so, in your particular case, that's what I would say, is I would say, you know what? I've never asked this particular question of a guest before, but I'm going to try asking it to Angus and just see kind of what happens. And then if it bombs, I'm just going to try and ask another new question and just kind of see where that goes.
I got it. Okay. I'm not sure I'm ready to start right now, but maybe I will later on in the interview. That's wonderful advice. Thank you. Our listeners are copywriters and business owners who use direct response copy in their businesses, and pragmatic creativity is high on the list of the capabilities these people want to increase. Could you share your thoughts on what creativity is from the point of view, and maybe you just did with imagination, I don't know, but I'd still like to hear it. What are your thoughts about creativity from the point of view of primal intelligence and how we can increase our abilities to be creative?
So creativity is a natural ability that is getting snuffed out by the modern world. And really the key to creativity is to do things that other people haven't done before. And in the modern world, we're taught that this is somehow accomplished by just being kind of random, by engaging in things like brainstorming and so on and so forth. But actually, what creativity comes from is you spotting something that's odd, unusual, a little out there, and then doubling down on it. And so as a copywriter, what I would say is if you're kind of like wandering around and you notice something that's a little quirky, why not try pushing that further in its direction of quirk? If you notice a kind of habit of writing that's a little odd, why not try pushing that harder in what's unusual about it? Or anything like that. And the more you start to do that, the more you start to open these possibilities. I use an example, which is a famous example, and there are Van Gogh. What does Van Gogh do? Van Gogh notices these kinds of unusual possibilities in color. And whereas other painters had kind of taken some of these unusual things and used them as minor highlights, Van Gogh said, what if I just go all the way? And so that when you see my paintings, all you see is this explosion of just kind of color, you know? And that was how he was able to break through and transform modern art. And so what I would say to anyone out there who's a copywriter is we're now obviously in an attention economy. It's even harder than ever to get people's attention because AI is creating all this spam out there. I mean, there's just all of this kind of what I would call like mid writing that's being generated by AI where it's okay. And it sounds like a lot of stuff you've heard before, but isn't particularly attention grabbing. And your job as a copywriter on some core level is to seize the attention of your audience. And you got to do that by taking these risks. And the way that you take risks intelligently is you see something that is new and interesting and start to accelerate it.
That's great advice. And there's a story very famous among copywriters and advertising people, especially direct response people, about Claude Hopkins, who was kind of the secular patron saint of advertising from early 1900s. He worked for an agency called, I can't remember now what it's called now, but Lord & Thomas in Chicago. And he was assigned the client of Schlitz Beer, which was number 15 in the market. And so he went up there and he went around with the pad and asked a lot of questions. And so what do you do here? Well, we wash the bottles four times. Oh, that's interesting. Well, everybody does that. Yeah, but nobody tells anyone else about that. Well, we get water from deep artisanal wells for purity. And so much against the wishes of the management of the company, he promoted these things. We wash our bottles 4 times, somehow neglecting to mention that all other beer manufacturers did the same thing. And he leaned on this unusual, he doubled down on it, and he brought them to number one in the marketplace. And when you were talking about intuition in the book and noticing exceptions and doubling down on that, I thought of that as an example.
Yeah, because a lot of great copywriting is discovering the thing that's there that isn't being said. And what you're talking about in that case is there's something that's a standard in the industry, but nobody knows about it outside the industry. But from an outsider perspective, you're like, well, that's interesting, and we're going to be the first person to own that. I mean, that's what I guess what Schlitz did, right? They were the first people to own this thing that was a market-wide phenomenon. Yep. I mean, another super, like, literally on-the-nose example of this is from Steve Jobs and Apple, which is that IBM rose to prominence using the slogan Think. So if you go back to, like, the 1970s, IBM's slogan was Think.
Never put that together.
Think.
Right.
And everyone's like, oh, you know, because the whole idea is IBM's brand is intelligence. And so Steve Jobs just comes along and goes, think different. And the whole point there is you just put this little bit of a twist on it, you know, and then all of a sudden you destroy IBM's entire brand with just the addition of a single word. And I think that, you know, that kind of copywriter move, which is, you know, let's go ahead and just add a little bit of different spin so that people are all of a sudden catching on to something that they haven't caught on to before. And, you know, the great thing about that is that's something that humans respond to immediately and that AI is incapable of learning. I mean, because AI is driven by pattern recognition, it literally can't spot something new or interesting. I mean, its entire purpose is to make everything bland and formulaic. And so your edge as a human is to pick up on those just little tiny things. And the other thing I think that's so critical about that in the case of the whether it's Schlitz or Apple or what have you, is that good copywriting is incisive. It's short. It immediately produces a transition in the listener's mind. And AI does the opposite. AI is bland and the opposite of incisive, right? It's just constantly regurgitating and reiterating stuff. And so you as a good copywriter, what's the smallest move that I can make that produces a jolt of surprise in the person reading it? And I think because AI is like gumming up the works now, there's just so much text everywhere. And can you as a copywriter write less but have what you write have more stick?
I think that's awesome advice and great insights. I want to shift now from copywriting to maybe the highest form of writing. In your book, you say there's a surprisingly long list of people, including politicians, scientists, and even a famous classical composer, Beethoven, as well as writers who have mentioned Shakespeare as a major influence in their lives. What is it about Shakespeare's work that is so valuable to all these people?
Yeah, this is a kind of a mind-blowing thing. So first of all, I don't know how many other folks have my experience of Shakespeare, but when I was growing up, I hated Shakespeare because I was taught him in school, and then, you know, I associated Shakespeare either with these incredibly tedious classes where we were forced to read blocks of inscrutable writing and then produce, you know, plot summaries for our teacher who was constantly marking us off, and we didn't understand exactly what it was that Macbeth was talking about. Or I associated it with these just, you know, atrocious high school plays where you would go and watch Romeo and Juliet or something and you would just be bored for 3 hours. It just, you know, the total inertia of the performance. And so I just had like this, you know, total lack of interest really growing up as a young person in Shakespeare's as anything meaningful or thoughtful. And then, you know, as I got older, I started to realize that all these people who are just totally fascinating in terms of their ability to innovate and change and lead and do smart things, whether that is, as we've already talked about, Steve Jobs, whether it's Abraham Lincoln, whether it's Nikola Tesla, whether it's Vincent van Gogh, who we've already talked about, whether it's Marie Curie. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on and on and on. All of them say, hey, this thing that you think is so special in me, it was sparked when I read Shakespeare. And I think there's two kind of core reasons for that. The first is that Shakespeare reconnects us with this ability to see the exceptional, to see the unique. There's a great line in Hamlet, as a stranger, give it welcome. It's one of the earliest lines in the play. Hamlet's talking about the ghost. And the point there is that what you do in the modern world is when you see something that's weird, you judge it negatively. You're like, oh, that's odd, you know, or you regress it to the mean, or you skip over it, you know. But what Shakespeare's saying is, no, the more that something is strange, say to yourself, there's something there that's revealing a limit in my own understanding. Grow my own mind to grasp it. And so the first thing that Shakespeare's really doing is he starts to awaken you to all of this stuff that's outside your comprehension. And so rather than getting into the modern trap of efficiency and productivity, because efficiency and productivity is essentially all about coming up with a core set of rules and then just plowing ahead and being that like annoying person who just disregards everything that is kind of on their plan, you know, you open yourself up to grow. So the first thing that Shakespeare does is he just kind of sparks this in you. And the second thing that he does is he reminds you that the power and potential of every life is to be an individual. Hamlet is someone who's told to follow this stage formulaic plot. There was literally another play called Hamlet at the time that Shakespeare was sort of riffing off. And even if there hadn't been another Hamlet, the play itself is based off this very boring formulaic idea of a revenge play in which something bad happens to your dad, so you get the other guy back. And there's this idea that, you know, these plays were just being kind of cranked out like Hollywood action movies or something. And what Hamlet does is he's like, you know what, I'm not going to play this traditional part. I'm going to just totally mess up this standard plot by acting in my own idiosyncratic way. And so the other thing that I think is really great about Shakespeare is Shakespeare reminds you, hey, the modern world is constantly trying to turn you into a cog, into a replaceable widget. It's constantly trying to fit you into this giant machine that it's constructed and telling you, you know, do your part or else you won't have a job and you won't get paid, you know? And, you know, so many of us are filled with this existential fear, like, oh my God, I've got to conform to the system, you know? I must be doing something wrong. I've got to go on the internet and find out, you know, what three simple tricks I need to follow in order to do what everybody else is doing, you know? And what Shakespeare is saying is like, no, man, you know, actually, life is the opportunity to be different, to be yourself, to be weird. That's why we're all here. And embrace that. And sure, that's challenging in the short term. Sure, that causes you a little bit of anxiety and stress in the short term because you're the only you. And so you feel vulnerable and you're like, where is my place? But the more that you do that, the more that you act weird, the more you empower the people around you to act a little bit weird. And then everybody starts acting weird. And then before you know it, you've got a team of weirdos, which is another name for a special operation, a team of commandos, a unique wolf pack of people all doing their own thing, but coming together to support each other's uniqueness. And that's really why we're all alive, right? Is to have that kind of fellowship of individuals around us who both remind us of how special they are through their uniqueness, but also empower us to be our own distinct selves.
Awesome. I love that. And you mentioned special operators. You have quite a history with Army Special Operators. Could you talk to us about that?
I would love nothing more than talking about Army Special Operations. So yeah, they're the ones who gave me the medal, and they have totally changed my life in the sense that they've allowed me to translate a lot of these kind of imaginative ideas I have and test them in practice. And so they came to me about 4 years ago and they said, hey, you know, Angus, you've got all these zany ideas about how the brain thinks in story and how we should all be reading Shakespeare and so on and so forth. Do you want to test those theories with some of our most elite units? And of course, like any crazy professor, I was like, yeah, I mean, that sounds awesome, right? Because I mean, as a professor, all you do is you sit around and spout nonsense. And, you know, your poor students have to write it down and repeat it on the test. But, you know, you never think as a professor you're actually going to get the chance to try your theories, let alone with some of the most interesting and accomplished people in the world. And so I got to go behind the veil. I got to work with all these teams, you know, unclassified units like the Green Berets, who are incredible. They're basically teachers with parachutes. We throw them into foreign countries and they go down there and they teach individuals how to build democracies, basically. And their whole job is not to sort of, you know, brainwash and control and sort of, you know, impose American ideas, but instead to go into these communities and be like, hey, you know, we want you to do your own thing. You know, we want you to essentially be like the original Americans and kind of rebel against authority. What can we do to kind of support you and empower you to be a team of individuals? And then there's also classified units that I work with that I can't technically name, although they do have certain kind of unclassified designations, such as Delta Force. And so these are all the groups that I got a chance to work with. And what was remarkable in working with them is that they all have the same psychology as Shakespeare. They all have this desire to value and celebrate the unique. They all have this capacity to spot the stranger and give it welcome. They have this ability to nurture teams where individuals are celebrated. And I can just say, as a chance, you know, through having worked with them, I've become much more weird myself because they've empowered me to kind of let my sort of, you know, inner oddball out more often in public. So that's my experience with the Army.
Well, okay, I'm gonna share something. I'm gonna take one of those risks you were talking about. After I read your book, my girlfriend, who also read it, but I think she was going through it more slowly on the audiobook, She said that I seem more confident, and I seem not to give a, I won't say the F word here because we're a family show, about what anyone else thinks about me. How's that for testimonial, huh?
That's awesome. And, you know, that is the point of the book on some level. So I actually, to share something that I also wasn't planning to share, my dad just had a medical episode. When he went into the hospital, it was a pretty serious episode. And like most of us, certainly like me, when you know you get into these medical episodes, you're really scared. You tend to become really passive, you know, and you tend to do exactly what you're told. And my dad called me last night from the hospital and said he'd just gotten in terrible trouble from the nurses because he'd like broken out of his bed and done a whole bunch of stuff that he'd wanted to do. And I was like, whoa, where is this all coming from? And it's the same thing. He like read the book and he was like, you know what? I just decided I wanted to go on my own kind of little special operation. And, you know, obviously you can push that too far. I don't want to encourage anyone who's in the hospital to deny doctors care. But the point was, is that psychologically for him, that was really empowering because he went from this place of feeling like he was helpless and dying. And then all of a sudden he kind of like turned it around, was like, no, I'm on this mission, you know, and I'm doing this cool stuff. And I'm like breaking out of my hospital room and like going, you know, through the hallways. And if you knew my dad, this was like the last thing you'd ever expect him to do. And I think, you know, a lot of us right now feel scared. And we feel scared because the world seems like a very volatile place and we seem very small in it. And, you know, economically, a lot of us feel crushed or fragile or like we kind of have to do what we're told or else we're just going to, you know, be extinguished. And the reality is that you have to turn that psychology around, partly because the only way you're going to be successful in life is by not giving an F, right? But also because that's the joy of life. I mean, if you just want to be, you know, if you just want everything to be the same forever, that's death. You're going to get there eventually, right? You know, and the point of life is that you get a chance to try things, not know if they're going to work or not. And hopefully you've got a team of people, it sounds like your girlfriend, who are willing to give you a little bit of backup if things don't work. So they'll pick you up and give you a chance to go out there and try again.
Awesome. I feel like we've been talking about your book the whole time, but would you like to give us any more of a preview of Primal Intelligence?
Before we do. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to do a creative edit here. Okay. I want to add, this is my crazy woo thoughts. I operate under the philosophy that whatever this is, existence, it's consciousness playing out a grand play. And it's experiencing it through all of our different perspectives. And when we get cut or when we get trapped in the box and the checklist and the things that society tells us we're supposed to do, it creates a very boring play for consciousness. And part of what I think that we're supposed to be here to do is to live out and help create an interesting story. And that's why I feel like the people who feel the most fulfilled in life are the ones that do kind of sneak out of the hospital room with their gown on and live the life that they want to live. I think that that's part of the purpose of this whole thing.
That was so beautifully expressed. And yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, it's not about living a hero's journey. It's about living your story. And that story that surprises you and surprises everyone around you. And having that kind of, that courage to embrace the joy and the possibility of doing something new. So I totally agree with that. And as far as the book goes, I would just say, hey, if everyone got that out of it, that would be great by me. And if everyone just got that and thinks like, I don't need to read the book, I would agree with them because that's more important than anything that I've written on a piece of paper.
Where can people find the book?
Well, if you just, I mean, it has become a national bestseller, so it's probably more out there than you need or want to know. But if you just Google Primal Intelligence, it'll come up on Primal or Penguin Random House or whatnot. If you want to find me, I'm pretty much the only Angus in Ohio, as far as I know. So if you Google Angus in Ohio, I'll come up pretty quick too.
Nice. We will make sure to have links in the show notes. And if you want to check out the show notes, head on over to copywriterspodcast.com. David, anything else before we're out of here?
Yeah, I would like to say that I got a text from Lori Haller, a graphic designer and strategist who's been on the show twice. She's a good friend of mine in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And your book was shipped specially to a bookstore there called Word. And she picked it up last night. So it's available at Word by special order in Brooklyn, Greenpoint, New York.
All right. Copywriterspodcast.com. Angus, thank you so much for coming on the show today. A breath of fresh air for sure. And we really appreciate you, man.
Thank you all. Rock on.
All right. Until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. Are you getting tired of using the hero's journey in your sales copy over and over again? My book, The Persuasion Story Code, will help you put together stories that convince your prospects and resolve their objections. If you are a copywriter, you'll appreciate that every single one of the 25 kinds of stories in this book have been proven time and time again in profitable sales copy. But I've also used these kinds of stories to close 5- and 6-figure deals for my own business, and so have many of my clients. These stories are easy to create and easy to tell. They sound like ordinary conversation, but they are all designed and proven to lead to a yes. You can get the Persuasion Story Code on Amazon.com. So get your copy today.